Last Sunday, we sang a song, so I forget who was leading, but we sang the song, Tell Me the Story of Jesus, write on my heart every word. How fitting it is. We could probably sing that song every Lord's Day. And how fitting it is that goes along with our theme. And Jesus was asked by his apostles in Matthew chapter 13, why he spoke to his followers in parables. You already know possibly where I'm going with this. No doubt you know the passage by heart, and we'll read this his answer in a moment in Matthew chapter 13. Incidentally, one of my preaching mentors was Leonard Dean, who was born in 1926 near Centerville, Tennessee. You know it well. I was just up there, Renee and I were just up there yesterday. And Brother Leonard also built my house in Tennessee in 1996. So if you're doing some math, I turned 30 years old that year, the most eye-opening up to that moment, the most eye-opening year of my life. In fact, Brother Dean turned 70 when he was building my house, about halfway through the building. Except for the concrete that was poured for the foundation and for the dirt work outside to backfill the foundation, Brother Leonard and his son Greg and another man, Brother Haynes, who was their helper, they did all the work. Even a block and brick fireplace with a chimney that went down to the basement floor and all the way up through the center of the roof. And as I was the contractor on paper, I was supplying him and Greg with the materials along the way. And once I asked him, like many other times, if they needed anything. And he must have been feeling pretty good this particular day, because when I asked if they needed anything, Brother Leonard, at 70 years old, said speed and accuracy. And I thought that was the funniest thing possible. For the context, he went on to face his Lord in his face to face with Jesus, as they say, in 2019 at 93 years old. I learned so much about the deity of Jesus from studying with him. And I remember how he admitted that he was not good at telling parables. He was a great Bible teacher. But he said some preachers are talented at telling parables, but none can match the way that Jesus could tell them. And it occurs to me that Jesus, all through his ministry, is attempting to bring his disciples along, if you will, in his teaching, in their understanding, and none of them grasping, and don't we feel the pain, none of them grasping the full scope of the message. To borrow a modern term, Jesus was asking, do you get me? And we'll look at Matthew 13:13 for his response to their question. Therefore, I speak to them in parables, because while seeing, they do not see. And while hearing, they do not hear, nor do they understand. And in their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is being fulfilled, which says, quote, you will keep on hearing, but will not understand. You will keep on seeing, but will not perceive. For the heart of this people has become dull. And with their ears they scarcely hear, and they have closed their eyes, lest they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and return, and I should heal them. Unquote from Isaiah's passage. Verse 16, he goes on, but blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear. For truly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desire to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it. This word dull in the New American Standard Version, King James uses the word wax gross, comes from a derivative of the Greek word pegnumi, meaning thick. Thick. Or to thicken. By implication, Strong's Concordance gives us this: to fatten, figuratively stupefy, or render callous. Now that makes sense to me. We have calluses on our hands if we do any kind of physical labor. And don't forget, words mean things. If we hope to understand God more fully, we will have to drill down sometimes to gain a clearer definition of what God's impression is, what God's intention is, I should say. And when I think of this word dull, I think of the edge of a knife. If you were to look under a magnifying glass at a knife's edge, you may say it looks sharp, until you look under that same knife, or look under a microscope at that same knife edge, and you gain a whole nother perspective. For the Greek word for dull to mean thick, it makes the most sense in the world to me. The heel of my hand is much thicker than a knife's edge. If I were to try to cut hot butter with the heel of my hand, I couldn't do it if I tried my hardest. A knife's edge is sharp if it's sharp enough, and with a little effort, it will slice through a flexible sheet of paper with ease. You've seen the demonstrations. Carrying that over to the hearts of a people who are separated from God, and I pray that none of us are, a thick heart could be thought of as a hard heart in our language today. Hard-hearted. Somebody might call hard-hearted Hannah. The illustration could be carried further to a thick-headed person, and surely you don't know any of those. You can't tell him anything. All the while, Jesus keeps asking, "Do you get me?" And you may remember, if you've been studying along with us, that Moses had a not a face-to-face, but a back-to-face meeting with Jehovah. Moses requested to see God's glory. To see the glory of God meant to see his face, apparently. And it wasn't a request that God, or I should say, it was a request that God said couldn't happen. Not going to happen. Most rebellious or modern rebellious man would say, "Why not? How insensitive of God to reject my request." And they may be better off to understand, before popping off at the mouth, God was protecting Moses by refusing to allow such a privilege. How do we know? The Bible tells us so. Moses received back this response: "No man can see me and live. While you rest on the cleft of the rock, I will cover your face with my hand so that you may see my back as I pass by. But no man can see me and live." And I wonder if Moses even understood such a thing as this. Ultimately, Jesus just said in Matthew 13 that he didn't. Is it any wonder why God speaks to men and women from cover to cover of the Holy Bible in shadows and parables and snips of revelations all along the history of the Bible? Could we have possibly understood it if he told it all in one telling? Those of us who have had children of much age at all have protected them from information or from things they shouldn't see because they're too young to absorb that information. Or the information or an image that would harm them. Let's face it, some things, once seen, can't be unseen. If only all the children of the world could be sheltered from reality until such information is appropriate. And maybe going out on a limb here, but I'm sure I'd get some amens if not silently. This is why child predators will have a tougher time finding salvation, in my estimation. And I believe by the words of Jesus himself, Matthew 18:6, "Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it is better for him that a heavy millstone, one drawn or pulled by a beast of burden, an oxen or whatever, be better for that heavy millstone to be hung around his neck than he be, and that he be drowned in the depth of the sea. And I commend Brother Billy Hillier for organizing such a great study this quarter. The face-to-face encounters with Jesus could keep us studying for years with all of the examples that could be talked about. I just feel like this is so inadequate to cover the ones we have in such a short time. If I took a poll, speaking of those face-to-face meetings, if I took a poll of this audience, in person or on YouTube, who do you think would top the list for the most FaceTime with Jesus during his ministry? Well, John the Apostle wrote in his account of an apostle whom Jesus loved. Most agree that he was speaking of himself. And then there's Peter, James, and John. They were privileged to go with Jesus when others were not. You see maybe a little more FaceTime. Raising of Jairus' daughter, we've seen. The Mount of Transfiguration, the Garden of Gethsemane, they were allowed more time. To get Jesus is a seriously deep subject, wouldn't you say? We've already noticed that Jesus was frustrated because his disciples didn't get it. Casting out the demon from the man's son. How long must I put up with you? How long must I suffer you? Do you get me? How would it feel to be face to face with Jesus, the thing you've been desiring to have, the privilege that you've been looking for, and then to realize that you let the Son of Man down? You let me down. It once was one of the most impactful methods of disciplining my daughters when they were younger. When a poor choice is made by just saying, "I'm disappointed in you." Oh my goodness, the tears would roll because of the disappointment. And so today our face-to-face encounter with Jesus is a fan favorite of most every preacher I've ever heard speak, Simon Peter the Apostle. I feel he'd be the winner of our poll of the most face-to-face or the most FaceTime with Jesus. And I can't imagine how long the subject of Peter would take us to study, to have sufficient time to cover all the instances. I'm going to cover several, and we're going to have to rush to get through them. But I can't even imagine how long it would take. And I wonder if I'd be wrong to say Peter could be a fumbling, bumbling New Testament version of Moses. I mean, Moses had a lot of FaceTime with God in a sense. And I wonder if Peter would be kind of a cartoon version of the revered Old Testament man of God. And that's not something I've ever thought about too deeply, but it occurs to me that Cecil B. DeMille made Moses seem to be bigger than life and a bigger than life character on the movie screen for the Ten Commandments. And you know, you just get that impression, wow, what a guy. He's something else. Charlton Heston's portrayal of Moses didn't depict a perfect man, but almost a Superman in voice and how he carried himself. On the other hand, Peter gets a lot of things twisted up, and I agree with the reason Peter would be a fan favorite, since I'm more closely mirroring Peter in my life than Moses most of my days, and I think that's the indication I've heard from many, many speakers on the subject. Stumbling, bumbling, and constantly second-guessing words and deeds and actions. Worried about what I've done in the past or what we've done in the past. Don't you see, maybe we're more like Peter than some. Like Peter matured and grew, not to perfection, I see things in a different light than I did when I was a younger man. Because of this, I have hope for Ronnie when I read about Peter. All the examples we could bring out where Peter was eye to eye with Jesus would surely take a while. So I'm sure you have some favorites, and I'll share a few of mine. Could we categorize, like we mentioned last time, I was speaking for you, could we categorize Peter as an underdog, like Auburn and Alabama Crimson Tide now, at least until Saban comes back? I mean, Peter was not an Apostle Paul. You know, we've seen them compared many times in our lives, possibly. He was not an Apostle Paul, on paper at least. Peter probably wouldn't make claims as Paul did, a Hebrew of Hebrews. Peter didn't claim to sit at the feet of Gamaliel studying the law of Moses. Paul could have easily been equated with some in our audience today, and with multiple degrees of higher learning, we look up to those, and we look up to Paul for his background in learning and fervor for Jehovah God. However, Peter was of a labor background. Imagine the genius, or just think of the genius in Christ's selection method. See, he covered every base this way. It would take miracles for folks to listen to Peter, possibly, to follow Christ. And maybe that's evidenced in Acts chapter 2, isn't it? How many times I needed a miracle to convince people in my feeble attempts to persuade them to follow Christ, but I didn't have any, and they didn't follow Christ. How interesting it is that prestige was there for maybe Paul. Now, Paul had signs and wonders in his bag of persuasion, but he had eloquence, and he had education and standing, if you will. Some folks were possibly more receptive to his standing in society. You know, and me on the other end, I'm just a common man. I'm just looking at God's word with the Peter the fisherman perspective. Peter could be the Auburn underdog in light of this view, if you want to think about it that way. How did Peter first meet Jesus? And so we'll get into it. This might be the best way to start. Matthew chapter 4, verses 18 through 22. And walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." And they immediately left the nets and followed him. And at this point, let me go back and clarify for those like my wife who were unfamiliar with my reference to Dallas Jenkins. I probably mentioned him more than I should. But if you have not been getting my mention of him, Mr. Jenkins is the director, producer, whatever his title is, of the Chosen series, where the ministry of Jesus is being portrayed in a marvelous way, in my view. And I read the Bible stories like this one, where Simon and Andrew were first called to follow Christ, wishing I had more of the blanks filled in. I like to ask questions, and we may never know all the answers. But the Chosen series has done that in many, many scenes for me, and I've shared that with you several times. In this instance, in this calling of these fishermen, I wonder how the fishermen brothers were so easily influenced to just drop their nets and go. We've talked about interruptions. Sometimes a person just needs to stay on task. And what would influence me, for instance, to drop the electrical or hydraulic diagnosis I'm in the middle of on my job to follow a perfect stranger, unless there was some prior knowledge of who, what, where, when, and why I should follow him? So either way, Peter and Andrew were doing what they knew, bass fishing from their $100,000 fishing boat, bait casting with top-of-the-line rods and reels, having the time of their life. No, not quite, was it? But for effect, wouldn't that make for a pretty good blooper for the Chosen? I'm just making a suggestion. Maybe that'll get somewhere. Actually, Simon and Andrew were casting nets. Have you ever had to work with your arms at shoulder height or above for extended periods of time? no pain, no gain, right? Have you ever had to play tug of war for a long extended periods of time? Just keep pulling and pulling and pulling against resistance, you see. And of course, you know what the result is. You have more muscle tone because of that. The upper body strength of these fishermen would have been quite impressive. No extra body fat would be on these fishermen, I assure you. And then there's the fish in the room. Leave it up to me to point it out. To illustrate what I mean by that, a preacher friend of mine worked at a fertilizer plant for 30 plus years. And Brother C.V. Robinson, and I had to work there periodically because of my work, and I asked him how he could stand the smell. And you may not know what the answer is. You may have heard people say this before because of other occupations. Smells like money to me. Well, the fish in the room demands to have smell-o-vision to get a full picture. Peter and Andrew smelled like fish constantly. Wouldn't you have loved to be married to that? Maybe their hands stopped smelling like fish by the end of Christ's ministry, but I have my doubts. By the way, I devote this much time for us to get to know the man, Peter, because we may be guilty of failing to build a foundation with our face-to-face encounters with people we meet today. You know, door knocks and cold calls to people who don't know us and they may not be very helpful in our society. And so knowing people, getting to know people is an important method of carrying the gospel to them. With that said, don't forget Jesus' fulfillment of prophecy. In Luke chapter 4 and verse 18, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set free those who are downtrodden. So Jesus called the fishermen first, according to the accounts we have, and Peter is the first mentioned. As his ministry progressed, we see several of Peter's examples of exuberance and impetuousness keep shining forth, which is far better. You know, we always kind of think, what in the world, Peter? You got the hoof in the mouth disease. But what would be worse? Apathy, complete apathy, like a teenager would say, whatever. You don't hear that ever, do you? So the next example we'll see comes from Matthew 14:22, and immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side. And while he sent the multitudes away, and after he sent the multitudes away, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray, and when it was evening, he was there alone, but the boat was already many stadia away from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were frightened, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take courage, it is I, do not be afraid." And Peter answered him, said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." And Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came toward Jesus. But seeing the wind, he became afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and took hold of him and said to him, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind stopped, and those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "You are certainly God's son." We often say, put yourself in another man's shoes. Are you able to put yourself in Peter's shoes in this instance? I mean, really. Come on in there, Peter. How about Andrew and John? Come on, boys, the water's fine. Well, not really. Not really. The verse said, but the boat was already many stadia, meaning a long distance. I don't know what that distance was. I didn't look it up. From the land, battered by the waves. There's the payoff word I want to look at. Battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. The New American Standard Version from which I was reading has a footnote for the word battered. The boat was tormented. That paints another picture for me. By the waves. No, in fact, the water was not fine, and no one else had the courage or lack of wisdom, Peter, we don't know which, to step out. Or should we say faith, to step out. Could you have put yourself in Peter's shoes that day? Now, we're not talking about glassy water, the kind that feels good under water skis. We're talking about waves. I suspect, though, you already have put yourself out there and put yourself in Peter's shoes. I suspect there is a direct correlation to Peter's spectacular attempt to walk on the water and our daily stepping out with boldness, only then to turn around immediately and start to sink. A lack of faith is a lack of faith, no matter the kind of waves we're standing on top of. So we are all, Peter, hearing Jesus' words back to us, O you, a little faith, why did you doubt? If you never doubt, then good for you, but I don't believe it. How cool would that have been to experience, though, walking on the water? But still, I have a question. If the waves were tormenting the boat, then how high was the water, Mama? 3 feet swells? 10 feet swells? I don't know, but we know it was a torment. Picture the Lord standing some distance far away. The fourth watch of the night would mean 3 to 6 a.m., which that paints a whole other picture in my mind. And my question, if the swells were high enough, wouldn't the view of the land or of Jesus be blocked intermittently as the swells rolled up and down? Are you seasick yet? It occurs to me that the scene is not true as depicted in VBS material, and therefore, Peter would have stepped out on waves that were hills and valleys. How is it that Peter could see wind? Well, he couldn't, could he? But he could only see the effects of strong wind. He could feel the wind. He could see the waves. Just how tall were those waves then? Regardless of my crazy questions, we have impetuous Peter doing what no other man ever had done, at least for a moment. He did it for a moment. We don't know how long he walked. Did he walk to the back of the auditorium? I don't know. But he did it for that moment, and no other man stepped out. And that's something to crow about. Oh, wait, that's too soon for crowing and roosters. We'll talk about that in a moment. Moving on, we would be remiss to leave out Peter's face-to-face with Jesus at the Transfiguration. And Billy has covered that scene masterfully. But the face-to-face with Moses and Elijah, they overlap another face-to-face, see, of Peter, James, and John. And I only want to focus on this one aspect of this encounter. When Peter... good-heartedly, I give him credit, he surely was coming from a good heart, suggested they build 3 memorials or tabernacles on this holy place to honor all of the Bible dispensations or the times of the Bible and these great men of the Bible. He got a response he never expected. This is my beloved son, hear him. Now, I don't know what that sounded like. But I can presume that it was one of those voices that'll make the skin crawl and you be afraid for every part of your life. Booming voice. Probably not a squeaky voice, just my thoughts here. If we're thinking about body language, and we ought to be, we cannot overlook the body language of Peter, James, and John. They were privileged to be face-to-face with Jesus, Moses, and Elijah. What a privilege. But not for long after seeing a bright cloud envelop them and hearing those words. Their body language proved this was a fearful moment, as well as the commentary from the writer, Matthew, in verse 6 through 8, Matthew 17. And when the disciples heard this, they fell on their faces and were much afraid. And Jesus came to them and touched them and said, "Arise and do not be afraid." And lifting up their eyes, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. Incidentally, I think I'm correct to point out that only Matthew describes the touch of the Master's hand in this instance, which makes this event even more special. "No man can see me and live," God told Moses. And Peter, James, and John had no intention to look upon God's face this night. And then it's important, in my view, to recall the instance for which Peter is probably the most famous or maybe the most quoted. And we'll look at Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 through 19. "Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he began asking his disciples, saying, 'Who do people say that the Son of Man is?' And they said, some say John the Baptist, and others Elijah, but still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets. He said to them, 'But who do you say that I am?' And Simon Peter answered," and wouldn't you know, he would be the one to answer, "'Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God.' And Jesus answered and said to him, 'Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, because flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say to you that you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not overpower it. I will give to you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you shall loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven." What a high point in Peter's career, so to speak. He was just informed by Jesus that his words were so special, so spot on, that Peter received them from the Father in heaven. The same Father that Peter has just hid his face from in a moment ago when we were reading. Jesus said that Peter was blessed because this was revealed to him. He didn't just get this from another man, you see. "Who do men say I am?" And I guess Peter is in tall cotton. No turning back now. He's on top of the world looking down on creation, and the only explanation I can find. Can you imagine? We're borrowing the song from the Carpenters. He's on top of the world. And yet, context often begs us to read further, doesn't it? Verse 21 to 23, Matthew 16. "From that time, Jesus Christ began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed." Can you imagine hearing that? "And be raised up on the third day. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, 'God forbid it, Lord. This shall never happen to you.' But he turned and said to Peter, 'Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are not setting your mind on God's interests, but man's. You let me down, Peter.'" Wow, what a transition. But what did we expect? We're talking about Peter. One extreme to the other. Time is rapidly getting away from us, so let's move on to the face-to-face of them all, in my view, for Peter. So to set the stage, Notice Jesus has been preparing the apostles for his death, burial, and resurrection on multiple occasions, beginning here in Matthew 16. Later in Matthew 26, after the Lord's Supper, I put an emphasis on that because lots of stuff happened at that Lord's Supper, including a fuss by the apostles about who's going to be the greatest. You would think that would be just a faux pas. You shouldn't do that. Also, Judas Iscariot allowed the devil to enter him fully to betray Jesus, so there was that to deal with. And when the supper was over, Matthew tells us in verses 31 to 35, we read where they traveled to the Mount of Olives, and then Jesus said to them, "You will all fall away because of me this night." King James, I think, says, "You will all be offended. For it is written, I will strike down the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered. But after I have been raised, I will go before you to Galilee." But Peter answered and said to him, "Even though all may fall away because of you, I will never fall away." Now, it might be worth saying here that Peter understandably had the best intentions with this statement. Think about it. He has walked on water. He has witnessed one of the most spectacular events in human history, Moses, Elijah, and Jesus the Christ communicating face to face. I wish I could have seen that. He has heard the voice of the Father from heaven, no mistaking what he heard. He has had a God-sent revelation that prompted him to profess the true identity of his friend and master from Nazareth. No doubt he truly meant what he said, and the other 10 meant it as well in verse 35, which we'll read in a second. But Jesus said in verse 34, "Truly I say to you that this very night before the cock crows, you shall deny me three times." Peter said to him, "Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." All the disciples said the same thing. What a stage has been set for the best face-to-face Peter had. And remember, Jesus requested seven of the apostles to stay some distance away. He took the three core, Peter, James, and John, on further to the Garden of Gethsemane to watch for him as he prayed. And what a prayer. We just don't have time to talk about all the depth of what we're talking about. A prayer the likes of which we can only understand as much as the writers can pen for us. I'm certain of it. I suspect the depths of that prayer may only be understood by deity alone. And we go on to Matthew 26 and verse 40. "And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. And said to John," he said to James, no, he said to Peter, "So you men could not keep watch with me 1 hour? Keep watching and praying that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." Their flesh was indeed weak, as mine would have been, I'll have to admit. But to quickly summarize, Jesus continues to pray. Eventually, Judas brings the party to the garden and betrays Jesus, another face-to-face that we could definitely expound on with more time. Peter cuts off the ear of Malchus, the servant, his aim not exactly what he possibly thought it was when wielding the sword. It was supposed by many that he would have taken off his head. Jesus healed the ear of the servant, and they promptly arrested him anyway. I mean, they've just witnessed a miracle, and they arrested him anyway. So there's that. So many things we could examine. And then fast forward to the illegal trials by the Jews. Luke 22, 54 through 62. "And having arrested him, they led him away and brought him to the house of the high priest. But Peter was following at a distance." There's Peter. No, I don't read any other names. Keep that in mind. After they had kindled a fire in the midst of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter was sitting among them. And where are the rest of the apostles? And a certain servant girl, seeing him as he sat in the firelight and looking intently at him, said, "This man was with him too." But he denied it, saying, "Woman, I do not know him." And a little later, another saw him and said, "You are one of them too." But Peter said, "Man, I am not." And after about an hour had passed, another man began to insist, saying, "Certainly this man also was with him, for he is a Galilean too." But Peter said, and other versions say even with cursing, "Man, I do not know what you're talking about." And immediately while he was still speaking, a cock crowed. Don't miss the next verse. Verse 61, and Luke's the only one who shows us this. "And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord and how he had told him, 'Before a cock crows today, you will deny me three times,' and went out and wept bitterly." This face-to-face encounter could be thought of as low as Peter could possibly go. He claimed he would die before he would betray Jesus. He had already fled with the rest at his arrest when Jesus was arrested. But impetuous Peter, even Peter, slipped into the courtyard where Jesus was being tried. Luke's is the only account that reveals to us that he was close enough that Jesus and he locked eyes. Powerful. Oh, to be a fly on the wall, right? And yet I'm sure I would have cried out loud with Peter to witness such a horrific scene. "You let me down, Peter. You let me down." And I hate that we're running out of time, because I wanted to move on and talk about one more that would leave us on a higher vein. But what a great story. What a great face-to-face with Jesus. We couldn't imagine more face time than Peter had. And in the end, he told him, "Feed my sheep." He could have said, "Three strikes, you're out, Peter. Three strikes, you're out. You denied me three times. More if you want to count the numbers." But he just told him, "You're still my man. Feed my sheep." I hope this has been helpful to you. Thank you so much.